welcome to Religion Bites Podcast 8. This is Mallory Nye again, and I'm taking up the discussion where I left it last, trying to explore the idea of culture within religion. As I said in the previous episode, I don't want to imply that there is a free-floating thing that is religion that exists somehow out of culture. Like we saw with Neo, with the spoon, in the film The Matrix, we have to look at things differently. Instead, when we see culture in religion, or otherwise a religion in culture, what we are observing are things that we choose to call religion within the context of particular cultural settings. And as I concluded, it is the particular cultural settings that often account for differences between religious groups, between religions within a larger religion, for example, Christianities within Christianity. So, I want to dig down a bit further now to focus on what so far has been a fairly general discussion of culture. We have divided culture into three types. First, the culture as a system, as a whole, for example, when we talk about my culture or their culture and so on. Second, the idea of culture as products that are seen to have value and quality, what are often called high culture or elite culture. And third, the idea of culture as products that don't have such high value or quality, but are parts of the lives of the many, the masses, what we often call mass culture, or perhaps popular culture. When talking about culture in religion, so far I've focused on the first of these, how cultural systems may be the basis of religious differences within what we consider the same religion. But we also often see a strong interplay between religions, that is, religious ideas and practices, and the other two aspects of culture. This can be in the ways I've outlined in an earlier episode, with the overlap between high and popular culture and high and popular religions. Not only is a religion an important language in which culture is expressed, it can often be the other way around. That is, religion is very often a medium for culture. Religious objects and places may be culturally significant in themselves. To explore this further, we need to note in particular that culture in itself is not something neutral. Although everybody has and does culture, the ways in which culture is experienced, performed, identified with, and practiced are subject to a range of social forces and conflicts. Culture very often is the means by which power is expressed and understood. For example, the distinction we have already noted between high and popular culture clearly marks this out. High culture is associated with a certain class or group of society, those who have more power, wealth, and status than others. It is the rich and powerful who sponsor elite culture, such as art, classical music, fine dining, and so on. Although such high culture may be accessible beyond the rich and powerful, the association is certainly in place because the rich and powerful define the high culture. In contrast, popular culture is almost by definition the domain of those without such power and wealth. Mass culture is the culture of the masses, the many, not the wealthy elite. This is not to say that the masses, that is the majority, are without power, and neither does it imply that those outside of the elite ruling group lack the discernment and appreciation of quality that is associated with high culture. Instead, it is more accurate to say that those in power choose to show their power through their use of culture, by showing themselves as distinct in and through their engagement with high culture, rather than the popular culture of the masses. By putting a high price on such distinction, they are able to exclude those without such wealth and power. They create segregation through the use of culture. But it's also been observed that the majority of people, the masses, often use culture in their own sorts of ways. As we shall discuss in a later podcast, the basic idea is that where there is the exercise of power, there is often resistance. Those who are under the political control of others may often choose to show both their compliance with that power and their challenge to it through the medium of culture, either high or popular culture. This idea has been discussed in cultural studies very much under the idea of subcultures or cultures of resistance. When looking within any cultural context, we should expect to find groups that are politically marginalized, but who in being so are themselves challenging those politics, either subtly or explicitly. It's probably useful here to give an example of the complexities of such a viewpoint. One classical place in which this subculture's approach has found such cultures of resistance is within youth studies. Very often the culture of young adults is challenging mainstream political structures. This may be expressed in various ways, for example through hipsters, grunge, emo, and so on. But one place in particular where the idea of resistance is most strongly observed is when the issue of power and age overlaps with the issue of power and race or ethnicity. That is, the culture of black youth has in particular been seen as a location for resistance, for the struggle against authority and power, very largely also expressed in terms of gender as well. Young black men challenging the power of old white men. In such spaces, we find particularly powerful cultural expressions, in particular gangster style and hip-hop. And this is manifest in specific cultural products, particularly music, street art, lyricism, and fashion. This takes us a certain way, but then we find that in such cultural spaces, other things also happen. The culture of the politically marginalized young black men does not stay in that place. It then goes through a cycle of appropriation by those outside of that particular subculture, those perhaps with a stake in the privilege that the subculture is challenging. In the field of hip-hop, for example, the music and poetry of rapping may originate in black youth culture, but has spread further through other artists. For example, white artists such as Eminem, Marshall Mathers, and many others. In addition, black artists such as 50 Cent, Kanye West, Missy Elliott, will.i.am become meaningful to large groups of white youth, thus transforming the particularities of black youth subculture into a much wider youth subculture. It is not one that transforms race. It simply changes the role of race from a simple black-white dynamic of power to a more complicated gradation. Many white rap and hip-hop artists are from poor and politically marginalized backgrounds themselves. White trash or trailer park are common expressions of such white marginalization, as are many of their followers. But they also have more wealthy and powerful followers who themselves engage with the subculture of hip-hop from their positions of power and wealth. In such, the subculture can itself become a marker of distinction or political power while simultaneously retaining its sense of resistance. One very interesting comparison to make here is that a similar process happened over half a century ago with another musical subcultural context. That is, in the growth of the genre of popular music that is known as rock and roll. Indeed, what has come to largely define the idea of popular culture in the 20th century. The first rock and roll artists were, in a similar way to rap and hip-hop artists, from politically marginalized black backgrounds. The music they produced was not likely to make the crossover at that time from subculture to much wider popular culture. It was when white artists, in particular artists who were perceived as being white rather than black, when they took up the musical style of black subcultures, that is when the age of rock and roll is seen to have begun. Thus, the founding figures of rock and roll, such as Elvis Presley and Jerry Lee Lewis, played music that was in many ways the same as black artists, but they were able to play it to a wider and whiter audience, because literally it was their faces on the album covers. All you gotta do, honey, is kinda stand in one spot, wiggle around just a little bit, that's what you got. One further important connection has also been observed in this development. Now let's go one time. Shake it, baby, shake it. Shake it, baby, shake it. The music of rock and roll was in itself largely derivative from another particular area of black subculture. That is, it was music that had strong roots and connections with Black Pentecostal music, the gospel and joyful music traditions of the Pentecostal churches. It was music from that sphere taken out into a secular domain initially by Black musicians and then out into a secular white domain by Presley and others. Some, like Elvis, saw the connection clearly in their music and tried, in ways they felt appropriate, to keep connected to the Christian traditions, whilst others, such as Jerry Lee Lewis, saw themselves as sinners, singing the music of Jesus in a new and almost blasphemous context. We could even push this further and reflect on the church traditions of Pentecostalism that helped to give rise to this subculture and the style of music that in itself became mainstream. The roots of the Pentecostal church are within the conflicts of race and ethnicity in American Christianity, in particular the Jim Crow traditions of segregation and political marginalization in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. The Pentecostal tradition looks in particular to a church in Los Angeles on Azusa Street under the leadership of William Seymour, which came to serve as the model of many churches across the American South. Most Pentecostal churches became places where African Americans could develop their own political spaces, that is, cultures of resistance, in contrast to, and in many ways in defiance of, the mainstream politically oppressive culture. Although the early days of Pentecostalism also saw the rise of white Pentecostal churches, for the large part most Pentecostal churches were Black African American. Such traditions of cultural resistance gave rise to and strongly influenced later developments, figures of the civil rights movement of the 1950s and 60s, which fed in to leaders such as Martin Luther King Jr., who, although himself of Baptist origins, his message, his preachings, were also influenced by the testimonies and approaches of the Pentecostalists. But such Pentecostalism was also a major influence on the growth and the development of a number of new traditions of Christianity across America, particularly during the mid-20th century. The spread of Pentecostalism into the white neighborhoods and communities and churches of America began to develop in a significant way. This has happened to an extent that these influences are now largely mainstream in many parts of America. And from such Pentecostalism emerged other more recent Christian traditions, such as the faith movement and the charismatic movement. Much of this more mainstream Pentecostal Christianity is associated with political conservatism rather than the more radical resistance of its earlier manifestations. It is also a very influential form of Christianity on the global level, as many new and emerging Christian groups in Southern America, Africa, and Asia have adopted the many derivative forms that developed from the original Pentecostal models. Thus, a parallel development occurred in the mid-20th century, where Black Pentecostal musical cultures were transformed into mainstream white American culture as rock and roll, whilst in largely separate developments, the mainly Black Pentecostal religious ideas and organizations themselves became part of mainstream American religion. And both, in their own ways, have gone global in a large way. These developments do not end here. Both Pentecostalism and rock and roll have fed into larger cultural contexts, such as in the development of hip-hop and other more recent musical traditions. The main point I simply wish to draw from this is in particular the complex and dynamic interplay between the spheres of what we call, largely for convenience, religion and culture. The religion is in the main part the church and spirituality traditions that fed into and emerged out of the Pentecostal and subsequent traditions. This is difficult enough to put a boundary around. But it is even harder to distinguish where the cultural issues here start and end. One may perhaps start with the cultural traditions of African Americans that largely shaped the basics of Pentecostalism, which were themselves influenced by religious traditions, American Methodism and other forms of Christianity, as well as African traditions that have, through generations of slavery, post-slavery and Jim Crow, become a heavily African-American culture. The results were a wide range of different and distinct cultural forms, from gospel church music to church practice such as speaking in tongues, and in a wider cultural context, the emergence of rock and roll popular music. It is not a simple matter of saying one thing is religion and the other is culture. If anything, there is a spectrum, at one end of which we might choose perhaps to put religion, and at the other end perhaps culture, with, if I may borrow a contemporary cultural form, with there being many shades of grey spread across these interactions. In conclusion, I think now we can see that the understanding of religion in whatever culture needs to start from a framework that just assumes that culture is always going to be kicking around in the picture. In fact, indeed, culture is very largely the picture itself. See you in the next episode.